Hey, hey, have you heard? It's your host, Chris DeMakes, and I'm headed back to the Punk Rock Museum. That's right, the powers that be have invited me back, and I couldn't be more excited. Allow me to be your guide as we wind through 5 decades of punk rock history, merchandise, and memorabilia. Cinco de Mayo weekend, Friday, May 3rd, Saturday, May 4th, and Sunday, May 5th. There'll be 2 tours each day at 12:30 p.m. and 4 p.m. And the best part for me is you. Your stories, your questions, your experiences. Yep, some of you old punkers have taught this guy a thing or two on these tours, and I love it. Head over to thepunkrockmuseum.com for tickets. Don't miss out. Only 30 spots per tour. Get your tickets now at thepunkrockmuseum.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, today's guest is Brian Fallon, lead vocalist and guitarist for the New Brunswick, New Jersey punk rock band, The Gaslight Anthem. Brian and I take a deep dive into the inspiration, writing, and recording of the song 45, taken from their 4th full-length album, 2012's Handwritten. From the moment he wrote the song, he felt it was special, as did producer Brendan O'Brien. Brian feels that a lot of songwriters from New Jersey lyrically come from the same place. He went on to explain that he thinks it's because New Jersey lives in the shadow of a number of bigger cities and that they'll always be underdogs with something to prove. And as all my favorite episodes do, things got a bit random and weird. We talked about a rather obscure punk band that both Brian and I have ties with. We discussed New Jersey native Skid Row, and Brian referenced the song Material Girl by Madonna. Interestingly enough, they all somehow tied back into the episode. For all this and a whole lot more, stick around. This is a fun one.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Chris DeMakes a podcast.
What's up, Brian?
How you doing, man? I'm good.
Good deal. You're in Jersey right now?
Yeah, I'm at home in Jersey Shore.
Nice. Did you ever move outside of Jersey over the years? You always stayed put?
Yeah, I lived in New York for a minute. Like, I think everybody does that for a second. And then not really. Like, I've spent time in, like, Nashville for, like, months, but not years. California for, like, a couple months, but not a long time. I spend so much time away that I feel like I got to stay here for a little while.
I hear you. And I can relate to feeling like, you know, I calculated at one point, I think I've spent almost 2 years of my life in LA recording records over the years.
Yeah.
And so I've technically lived there.
Yeah. It's weird how you like you can end up living places, but not intentionally. I don't know, though. Like, you know what I mean? Like, being on tour so much that you're just like, oh, I got to have something that I recognize. I need one toilet that stays put.
yeah, the little things, you know.
It is the little things.
I know you can relate to this. I had a girlfriend years ago that just would drive her crazy. I'd get home from the road and she's like, "You never unpack your bathroom bag. You never hang up your toothbrush." It's like, well, why? I'm just gonna leave again. I just grab the bag and go, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the sign. She's got to go. You know?
Yeah, she did. She did.
Good. Hey, see ya.
And I still got the bathroom bag.
Yeah,
so, hey.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. The bathroom bag will hold you forever in those times of, you know, lonely nights.
It's the win-win. Well, you know, I got to say, I did a crash course, as I do with all these episodes of your career. And looking back, what an insane trajectory, you know, the Gaslight Anthem had.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I remember hearing your name, and the next thing you knew, it wasn't like this slow build. It might have felt like a slow build on your end, but it was just like you guys were everywhere. And,
Yeah. You
know, there's something fascinating to me, and I felt this a little bit. You know, less than Jake's former drummer, Vinny, is from New Jersey.
And oh, okay.
He wrote all our lyrics back in the day. And people, it's the one standout of our band was the lyrics. They felt this connection to them. They were very, I'll use the term blue collar, very relatable lyrics. And there's something in the soil in Jersey that breeds that. It's like, you know, you look to Springsteen, you look to the punk bands, Gaslight, your writing style, the Bouncing Souls. What is it about that working man's ethic that just comes out that touches so many people?
Well, I mean, I think that may possibly be that sort of underdog mentality where you're always in the shadow of somewhere cooler. Like, there's always New York, or there's even Philadelphia or Washington, D.C. You're surrounded on all sides by things cooler. And even on the other side, by Europe over the Atlantic Ocean. So like they're in all directions are things better than yourself. So, you know, you really can sympathize with the idea of being, you know, like, I guess what punk rock is about, like, and being, feeling left out, essentially.
Mm.
And I feel like that sort of is bred here. And it's also not a real optimistic place. Like, there's not, you know, there's a lot of factories and, you know, buildings and things like that. Mm-hmm. There's not like, there are scenery. There's like woods and, you know, beaches, but they're crowded, you know, not the woods, but the beaches are incredibly crowded. Yeah. There's no isolation here. So I think you feel this pressure of always being squeezed, you know, it's like a weird thing.
Yeah. And I've never heard it put like that. That's interesting. There's something about the lyrics from the bands over the years from Jersey that, to me, I'll use the word, they're believable.
Yeah.
They feel real. They don't feel like, oh, this is just somebody that put pen to paper to get a lyric out. You know, they're believable.
There's definitely horrible, horrible bands from New Jersey. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
There's bad ones. There's, but I
could name 10 right now, but I'll save you.
Yeah. No, I'm with you, man. Probably the same. At least five of them are probably the same. But I think that, you know, there is like this sense. There's also, you know, like Grandfather Bruce or like Uncle Bruce or whatever you want to call him. But he's, you know, sort of set the bar pretty high. Like, I imagine, I don't know, what's Bob Dylan from Minnesota or something like that? Like somewhere, you know, wherever he's from, that's like, you know, there's like this long, long shadow of like what you're supposed to do. And I guess, you know, since Bruce was the first one to really like make it,
mm-hmm.
you know, there was like a sense of seriousness. Even if you look at the bands, like, you know, I was listening to the first Skid Row record the other day, and you know, it's a good record. But there's a sense of seriousness. Like all the other 80s bands were writing about, like, you know, like smoking in the boys' room or like whatever, like girls, girls, girls. But like Skid Row was like 18 in life. Like, I just killed a guy and now I'm going to jail. Like that's like the mindset. They're all Jersey guys. You know, it's weird.
It's funny you brought them up, because I was going to bring up Skid Row to you. Their first singer before Sebastian, his name was Matt Fallon, and I wanted to see if there was any relation being a Jersey guy.
No, there's. I don't think so. I mean, I've never met him, but like, I think.
Okay, did you know that, though?
I did. Yeah, I did.
And okay.
I looked myself. I was like, oh, I wonder if this guy's like my, you know, cousin Matt. I'd be like, that'd be cool.
That's what I thought you may say. Yeah, it's my uncle. You
I
know.
Wish. Like,
you
just... I mean, I don't know. Tell Snake Sabo.
Yeah.
Tell him to call me.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, Dave.
I will. Which is funny. A quick aside. I hung out with Dave Sabo a couple nights. We Less Than Jake, for whatever reason, opened up Bon Jovi's Crush tour for 2 weeks on the East Coast back in 2000. And Dave came out to the Continental Airlines Arena in Jersey when I'm like, I can't believe that Dave from Skid Row is on my bus right now drinking beers
cool,
with us.
Man. Dude, those guys are cool. Like, I mean, even like I met John a few times, and like he's. They're so cool. Like, and Dave was the lyricist, right? Skid Row.
Dave and Rachel did the lyrics.
Oh yeah, that's right. Rachel, the bass player. Bolin, right? Rachel Bolin.
Yeah, Rachel Bolin. Yeah.
They. So yeah, like, I mean, they were the ones like from here, because Sebastian, I guess, was Canadian. So, but you can hear all the, you know, the Jersey thing from them too, and like, you know, even I guess like John Bon Jovi's first couple records, they were darker. you know, like then, mm-hmm. then like later, but like, there was always that thing. I don't know. Maybe it's, there's so many people from here, like Bruce Willis is from here, Die Hard, you know, Jack Nicholson. Like it's like this weird thing.
It's cool you brought up Skid Row, because a lot of, you're right. Most of those bands were singing about girls and partying and whatever else. And they were singing about some more real, again, relatable everyday human things.
Yeah. I mean, even like the ballads, like the I Remember You and all that. It's like that's something that every kid did. I remember like being like 8 years old when that came out and hearing it and being like, oh yeah, like love letters in the sand, like drawn like, you know, like BF plus like, you know, Jennifer Lopez or whoever it was, you know, at the time that I would write in the sand. And like, but every kid did that. It was like, I don't know, like that seems like more related. It was much more relatable to me than like, don't need nothing but a good time. Like time sucked when I was a kid. I don't know about, yeah. You know, like there was no good time.
Well, you know, and again, talking about that trajectory, you know, you guys were formed in 2006. The debut record Sink or Swim came out 2007. And then you signed with Side One Dummy, and the 59 Sound came out in 2008. And I mean, just like I said, that year between 07 and 08, you guys just exploded.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was everywhere. And your next record, 2010's American Slang, came out, and 59 Sound and American Slang were both produced by Ted Hutt, who's known for working with Dropkick Murphys, Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, Old Crow Medicine Show, among others. I know he's done stuff with Bouncing Souls. And then you got signed to Mercury, and in July 2012, Handwritten was released. And was there talk of working with Ted again? I know you brought in Brendan O'Brien, and why'd you work with Brendan? Was there other producers that the label maybe had brought in, and why'd you end up going with Brendan?
I think with Ted, like we had done two records with Ted, the 59 Sound and American Slang, and then I did like a side project, The Horrible Crows, with Ted Hutt. So it was like third record with Ted Hutt. And then like when we went to do Handwritten, we sort of were like, you know, maybe we should do something else, like to see what happens. Like if we did it, not because like we didn't like Ted, obviously Ted worked well and I've worked with him since. And I don't know, I thought it was like a good idea to just try and see who we could get. And then we all, you know, we grew up on the 90s, like Pearl Jam records and stuff like that. So we were like, yeah, like who's the coolest like record producer, Red Hot Chili Peppers, like Blood Sugar, Sex Magik. Like Brendan was there. That was the guy who was like, Rick Rubin obviously produced it, but Brendan was the one who's there every day recording it,
yeah.
Like, whatever.
Yeah.
So like, I figured, you know, let's talk to Brendan. And he was just like, he worked with Bruce and he was cool. Like Brendan's just a rock guy, super, super cool. And really like not friendly in the sense of like, you know, like he's not going to pull any punches. He was just like us. So he was just like, you know, not like, oh yeah, like this is great, everything's great. Like he was just like, this sucks, rewrite this, like this isn't good. And you'd just be like, all right, cool.
That's crazy. Yeah, yeah. I wanted to pick your brain a little bit about him because I've had, you know, been doing the pod now for about a year and a half, had a bunch of guests on, and maybe someone has worked with Brendan, but none of the songs that I featured on the show were produced by Brendan. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you look at you look at his discography, The Killers, AC/DC, Bruce Springsteen, Chris Cornell, Pearl Jam, Train, The Offspring, The Fray, My Chemical Romance, Rage Against the Machine, Neil Young, Stone Temple Pilots, you know, and yeah. Now all of a sudden you're in a room with that. Had to have been a trip, right?
I was wild. It was totally wild. But I was in for it. I was ready to like get into it with him. He was the coolest because he'd done. I spent most of my time with him asking him questions about other bands, like who's the best singer, you know, or like all this stuff. And he was really open about it all. He was cool.
That was one of my favorite things of working with some of the big name producers that we have, was picking their brains and warming up enough to where you could pick their brains. Like, okay,
yeah.
We're out to dinner now. So what's Chris Cornell like, you
yeah.
know? And,
yeah.
And then they start talking, you're hearing these stories and you're like, I can't believe, you know, some of the stuff Rob Cavallo told me, I was like, I can't believe that I'm
yeah.
hearing this. Green Day stories and stuff that were just phenomenal. Some stuff that I won't even repeat because he was telling me in confidence.
Sure.
And I've always held that near and dear. But the album Handwritten was your first, like, again, on Mercury Records. You were signed to Mercury, number 3 on the US Billboard 200 chart, you know. So that's
I
insane.
Forgot about that. Yeah, it's wild.
That's such an accomplishment. Congratulations.
It was wild when that came out. I mean, like, it was, I remember it being like, all right, well, okay, you know, like this is pretty big now. And then it was big. And I don't know, I don't think we really thought about it too much. We wanted to be a big band. Like, we didn't want to be a big band, but we you know, when it happened, I think we were all a little bit surprised. Like, did we pull it off like this? You know, because I don't think we ever shot to be like, we never wanted to say like, be like at My Chemical Romance, where you're like, I don't know, like that's huge. Like that's like pop, pop big, you know, it's like Bon Jovi big.
Sure.
But we thought if we could be like the biggest punk band, that'd be sick. And then,
yeah,
you know, we got to the level where we were like, all right, man, like, you know, the bands we grew up listening to, we had either surpassed or we were on the level with like pretty big bands. Like, and I was like, especially live, like maybe not record sales or whatever, but live, we were like going, so we were selling out the big places and it was cool. Like we just were like, all right, cool. Like who's the young band that we could take out with us now? So it just became like a further extension of what we were doing previously, but just cooler.
Well, you want to talk about all the pieces of the puzzle lining up plus hard work. I mean, you made three great records in a row. It was, everything was just kind of coming to this crescendo here. And then the record comes out, explodes to number three. The song we're going to talk about today, 45, you know, when I was researching your catalog, I was certain it was going to be something on the 59 sound that we'd be talking about today, you know, and I'm like, we got to go for 45.
Yeah.
I mean, the song just was massive for you guys.
I watched the
performance. You got to play Late Night with Letterman.
Yeah.
I watched a performance at Reading and Leeds Festival, a couple different ones. And you can attest to this, when you put a record out, it takes a minute for people to warm up. But I was watching videos of you guys from 2012, 2013 of 45, and just every fist is in the air. People screaming, singing along.
Yeah, it was wild. Like when we did the video, I remember we did it at the Stone Pony and we had like an open, you know, like email. We just said like, if you want to come to the video, there's this many spaces, like first come, first serve, show up. And I remember saying on the day, the morning of the video, I was like, I hope people show up. And then like, I was nervous still, cause like, you don't really know. And then there was like so many people.
I bet the whole boardwalk showed up.
Dude, like that place was jammed. And it was like, you know, and then we had to turn people away. We just had to be like, you can't take any more people in here. And then we ended up like, we were doing the video, but then we ended up doing a show for free just because it was like, well, we're here, we're set up, let's just do it. And then we did it.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. Like that was a good day.
What do you remember about writing 45? Where was it in the process?
Well, so that was fun because when I was writing it, I came back from tour and then I was like, okay, time to write a record. Like I know we have, you know, we better get this done. And I remember having like a real hell of a time coming up with something like I always do. Every time I start to write a record, I forget how to write songs entirely. And it's a nightmare. I hate it.
Do you get in your head?
Big time. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You're a fake. You can't do this. Like you're never going to do this again. Like this is hard. It's a bad idea. Like go back to construction now. But I remember sitting there and I remember going like, I said, no, you know, I could do this. And I remember playing the chorus and just going to like myself, like, and then like, not like, da-da-da-da-da. And then I wrote, turn the record over, like in my head, just like I was looking at a record or something like that. And I thought like, oh, and you know, yeah, like it's your life, you know, and this is the next chapter. We're on a major label now. I'll flip it over, like see what happens. And then it all just like came out at the typewriter and I was not the typewriter, but the laptop. And then I showed it to everybody and everybody was like, meh, it's all right.
Really?
It's all right. I was like, this song rules. And everyone was like, it's all right. Like even friends, I'm talking everybody, it's fine. It's okay. And then like, I remember showing it to my one friend, Andy Diamond. And he goes, he's like the mayor of New Jersey. And he's like, kid, this is the best song you ever did. And I was like, you know what? You're right. It is the best song. And then I sent it to Brendan and he was like, yo, this is a hit song. And I was like, okay.
I'm glad you said that. That was my next question. What did Brendan think of it?
Yeah, immediately. He said to me, he goes, this is a hit song. He said, only thing, he said, that little riff that you're doing in the bridge, that's got to happen all over. And it was the down, 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 down. And I wrote that as a little bridge part, thinking to myself, I'm like, oh, this sounds like Texas Is the Reason. Cool. I'll put this in the bridge, you know,
okay.
Like as a little break to like the rest of the punkness of the song. And I was like, it'll give it a little breakdown. Whatever. So I never thought anything of it. And he's like, that's the riff. And I was like, okay. And then That was it. We did it.
That's wild. So I guess you've already answered my question. I usually ask, like, where was this song to you in terms of, like, where did it rank with the rest of the stuff in the record? You thought it was up there. You thought it was great. Brennan thought it was great.
Yeah.
Where in the process of writing the record did this song come? Was it early on or was it late in the game?
I would say first or second song. It was probably the second. No, I'm sorry. I could tell you. It was number three. It was the third song. The first song.
That's awesome.
Yeah. The first song was a song called Biloxi Parish. Second one was a song called May. And then 45 was the third one.
No kidding.
And I was like, I got this. I was like, I got this one.
That's cool. Yeah. Usually for me, it's always the later songs of the record that seem to, you know, you kind of get in a groove or something. The first one kind of go on the back burner. That's just my experience.
Yeah. I don't know. I've always had it like where it, like the initial burst of inspiration when I sit down to write, it's like so freeing when you finally get past all like the head case stuff. Like I get the best ideas right away and then kind of struggle for a while again in the middle. I usually get like 4 or 5 songs and then struggle for 6 months and then like, and then I come up with like 20 songs.
Well, this song, there's one word to it. It's immediate for me. I remember hearing it the first time. I'm like, what's there not to like about this song? It's just honest. It's straightforward. It's catchy as hell. The song's 3 minutes and 23 seconds. The song begins... Song begins with drums and that clean arpeggiated guitar riff that you're speaking of. Right off the top for 4 bars, and the bass and the guitar are playing this simple yet melodic lick that goes on for 4 bars. And there's a snare roll. And now we're into the verse progression without vocals yet. And you let out this ow kind of vocal thing, but it's kind of buried. It's not like, it doesn't hit you over, you know, between the eyes. It's there, but it's subtle. That happens. And then another guitar part playing a quicker lick, almost sounds like downstrokes, happens for 8 bars. And then we're into verse one. I'm going to read all of these, but I'll explain. I think you got a pre-chorus in here. I don't think this is just a verse into the chorus, and I'll tell you why I think that. But I'm going to read the whole thing. Have you seen my hands? Just look at them shake, and the song just keeps on repeating. Drop the needle again, and I dance with your ghost. Oh, but that ain't the way. I can't move on, and I can't stay the same. And all my friends say. What's happening here?
I think, you know, it's like when you're feeling like trapped in those situations where you can't get over something, be it a relationship or a, you know, and it felt like I, you know, kind of thought that as a writer, like this song, I was truly talking to myself in twofold. One, I was referencing when I was a kid and my first like serious, like high school breakup, like that was like formative years. And encouraging myself of that. And second, I was encouraging myself as I was doubting in my own ability to write and be what I was, because I was officially a musician by trade now. And I was not, and maybe in my head, I was not before, whether I was in reality or not. And so, you know, what you're hearing here is that's me working that out and saying, I feel like a lot of my songs are always talking to the listener, and that this song for certain is talking to myself and the listener.
Okay. And the song title 45 does not appear anywhere in the lyrics. Can you shed some light? Or you care to share what 45 is about?
Yeah. Well, 45 is the single, like a vinyl single. So, you know, turn the record over. Like, it's like, there's all these references that drop the needle again. Like, it's like very simple, like the wax and the needle.
Sometimes I'm a little too highbrow for my own jeans here, Brian. I need to be more Captain Obvious.
You know what?
I get it now.
It's me, me and Jeff Tweedy. We say, don't be afraid of low-hanging fruit.
I should have grabbed the rotten apple, because 45 obviously it makes complete sense to me now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm arguing that there's a pre-chorus here.
I think there is.
Yeah, I can't move on and I can't stay the same because the progression changes there.
Yeah.
And man, that chord, and when it goes there, it's so lifting. I can't move on. Can't move on, I can't stay the same, and all my friends say. And then we're into chorus one. It's only 45 seconds in the song. You're already in the chorus. Do you recall up to this point, Brendan, changing anything or arrangement-wise, or was this pretty much the same? And did you demo the song prior to going in?
He did not change anything with this one, which was awesome for me. I felt really good about that. But I did. I demoed it acoustic, so it was just me playing it to probably a click track. So it was just me and like that, and then singing it, you know. But I would sing it like at regular volume and not like acoustic ish.
But yeah, chorus one comes quick. 45 seconds, we're already here, and I'm gonna read these lyrics, and I'll have you talk about these. Hey, hey, turn the record over. Hey, hey, and I'll see you on the flip side. There you go. Turn the key and engine over. Let her go. Let somebody else lay at her feet.
That's just like that's the same like kind of encouragement, but like universal encouragement. Like, mm-hmm. I remember like singing the song to myself and then getting to the chorus part and kind of going like singing the melody. Like, I often say words that are in front of me. Like, I had a song that I just, I was looking at one of the Pearl Jam records and they said the word rearview mirror in the melody. And then it actually became something else. Later, you know, so I'm a big fan of like saying whatever's on your mind, like just, mm-hmm. I guess that's like the Beatles kind of thing, like where they're like, what was it? Scrambled eggs was like yesterday.
Right.
You know, like that, you know what I mean? Like, it was just like scrambled eggs, like, I love your legs. So I think that that's like a healthy thing to do. And this one was just like, hey, 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 na, 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 na. And then I'd be like, I don't know. Turn the record over. Like, what would you say? Like, how do you get on with your life? Like, you know, I thought it was like such a good thing. Oh, you know what? It was because I wanted to get the phrase. I had the phrase, I'll see you on the flip side. It was in my head and I couldn't get rid of it. So I went, hey, like something. And then I said, oh, we probably should say that again. Like, you know, cause I knew I was like, what would I want to do at a show? You know, I'd want to, you want to sing first time you hear the song. So what do? Well, you don't say words. You say, hey, hey, or whoa, or something like that. And I felt like, you know, I had, and then I said, see you on the flip side. And I was like, the flip side of what? And I was like, I don't know, a record. Like, yeah, turn the record over. Like, that's a real thing I would have said to somebody. Like, enough, turn the record over. You know, we would have said that to our friends. Stop, turn it over. That's what you'd say to your friends when you're annoyed.
Hey, everybody, don't you dare go anywhere. There's lots more Krista Makes a Podcast after these messages from our sponsors.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody. If you like Krista Makes a Podcast, I'm going to assume that you like music podcasts. And if you like music podcasts, check out One Hit Thunder. Each week, we dive into a one-hit wonder, and along the way, we gain some knowledge and have some laughs. Lou Bega, Crazy Town, Harvey Danger, The New Radicals, Aha. We're over 100 episodes in now, and to paraphrase the great Matthew Wilder, nothing's going to break our stride. Subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods. And now, back to the show.
there's something else in this chorus that I noticed. And I remember having a conversation with a producer years ago, and I knew he was full of crap as a young person. There's no rules in songwriting, Brian, as you know. And you get the line over in the first line, and you get the line over on the third line. I remember having that lyrical argument with the producer. He's like, you can't use the same word in the chorus. Like, yes, you can. You know, and this is further proof. There's plenty of songs that do it. On the instrumentation here in the chorus, instrumental side, it sounds like another pair of stereo guitars comes in here. That guitar lick is pan left. It's playing its own counter melody. And all the licks, all those little counter melody licks, they're very subtle. It's more like ear candy throughout this song. It's not like they're big, you know, loud, you know, AC/DC guitar lick parts coming in, you know, but they work perfectly that way. The progression of the chorus differs from the verse, but that guitar lick gives it continuity, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's subtle. The first half of the chorus, it starts on the minor, and then the second half, it uses the exact same chords, but just flips to the major for the one.
Yes.
And so they switch positions, but it's just, the only reason I did that is just to get this whole idea musically for this song was to make the song move and constantly be interesting, constantly changing, constantly interesting, no boring. No, that was the rule with this record, especially with Brendan, no fat. Like he used to say, no timekeeping, no playing that's just timekeeping, none of that. He's like, it has to have a purpose or it's out of here. Like, okay.
You can see me smiling real big because I have that written down here. There, you know, this part that comes in, the drums on the second half of the chorus, the drums go to the ride cymbal. Okay. The chord progression, as you said, flips there and the guitar lick changes. And I wrote down that this is like two choruses in one that you get. Yeah, and that's great because to your point, it just keeps it fresh. There's no fat. You know, you don't get sick of the chorus. It's like two in one.
Yeah, I think I'm a big fan of like that. You gotta morph the thing all the time. You have to keep it moving and try to find new ways to like even if you have like say you have one melody, right? The second half of it, you only have the notes or you have the tempo or the words. So one of those things has got to speed up or slow down. I'm always a big fan of if it starts minor, you finish it major. If it starts like slow, speed up, you know, like, cause like even the words of the chorus, I thought about like having like the long, like, hey, hey, two times. And then I was like, okay, the next half of the chorus has got to be like, you know, faster paced. And you got to keep people interested. Cause my whole view was always thinking about the live show. And like when you hear a band that you don't know, unless they're interesting, like your band is extremely interesting live, you know, like, first of all, there's a lot of people to watch, but you don't like, you know, it sucks when you like see a band like trying as hard as they can, but you're just like, how many times can you watch four people play guitar and bass and drums? I mean, unless the songs are mind blowing, but often they're not. So you got to find a way to keep it interesting. And when I was, that's where this all came from. Like when I was thinking about it.
I'll tell you something else I love. You get the first harmonies in the song on the back half. There you go. Turn the key in the engine over. Yeah. Let her go. Let somebody else later feed. The harmonies come in there. You know, was there ever talk of having the harmonies come at the top, or did Brendan want to save that, or do you want to save that?
I don't know. That would have been a Brendan thing because that's Brendan doing them. So he was really big on the harmony thing. And I was kind of like, harmony, like harmony, schmarmony, unison or nothing, you know, like
unison or die. Yeah. Come on, I'm from Jersey.
We
sing as one.
Yeah, right. It's us against you, pal. Which side are you on? You know, like
so Brendan did those. Yeah. Brendan did those vocals because I know Brendan was credited as extra guitar on the record. He was credited as playing some keys, and he's a multi-instrumentalist, as I know.
Yeah, well, I'll probably get sued or something for telling you this, but he probably did not take credit. I can't say for sure, but he probably didn't take credit for singing because you get paid more for singing. And dude, Brendan was so cool. Like Brendan never helped me. I'm like a real staunch, like no co-writing, like for, you know, especially with Gaslight. I've broken my rule like three times ever. But he said to me like in the beginning, he was like, you know, he's like, if I ever make a suggestion to you, he's like, don't worry about being defensive about like co-writing. He's like, I've made enough of a living. I don't need your money. And he's like, I'm not going to take any of your money. So he's like, if I ever come up with an idea and you like it, he's like, I'm giving it to you. And it never actually ended up happening. But the fact that he said that I thought was so awesome and like so unique, like That does not happen. Everybody's like, oh, I said the word the, man. Like, I got 30%. You know what I mean? A word for a third. And you're just like, you're like, you're pirates. You're all pirates.
It lets you as the artist keep your guard down. It's refreshing.
Yeah, big time. Like 100%, it lets you as an artist get your guard down. And that's how you get the best stuff.
Absolutely. Well, there's a 4-bar reintro after the chorus. It's just guitar and drums. And then it's 4 bars with the bass and verse lick progression before verse 2 starts. Have you seen my heart? Have you seen how it bleeds? And the nights are so long, baby. Out here in the deep, the ticking of hours, lonely, I hear the alarm. And I'll read the pre-chorus too. I used to hear when she would sleep in my arms, but better sense says.
So all that is like a continuation of like the more relational kind of self-comforting pep talk. But there's a little bit of candy in there. Like, so what that is like, so when there was two like bad breakups I had, one was when I was in high school. And then the second, I filled in for a New Jersey band for like 6 months. It was my first like tour. There's this band called Lane Meyer and they lost their singer. So their bass player stepped up to be their singer and they said, they needed a guitar player who could also kind of sing once in a while, like sort of be like the other guy in the Goo Goo Dolls. And I was like, I'm not really into it, but I do want to be in a band and this band's not lame. So I was like, that's cool. Let's do it. And I really liked their other guitar player. He was an awesome guy. So we bonded. And then,
so you know Sean Smith.
Yeah, I do know Sean. And so Sean,
I hung out with Sean in Tampa in Florida, and I knew him for months. We hung out together, and he'd go to the same bar I did. And one night, he's like, "Yeah, I don't know if you remember my band. We played with you guys a couple times. We're called Lane Meyer." I'm like, "Of course I know who you are." So you played in Lane Meyer?
Yeah, for about 6 months. Maybe five months. Yeah. So
what?
I did one tour of the U.S. with them with the Lawrence Arms and. And it was cool. I learned everything I know about touring. It was like 8-9 weeks in my first tour ever. It was a nightmare. But it was awesome. And so the point of that is I wrote one song for that band that I sang and it was called Alarm. You've ever thought of me, make it known before I leave. Just show who I know before the places. And if you see me walk away and something inside you breaks, maybe that's the first time you and I thought we never felt the same. And they hated it, but it was actually a great song that ended up like being doing well. So so
hey, new guy, you got to go now.
So they didn't like that I wrote a good song, which but it wasn't like, dude, it's not a competition. It's just like, hey, that's just one more good song we have now. Like, it doesn't matter who sings it. But so I wrote, I Hear the Alarm. And that was like a little joke to myself that no one would ever get. And I've never told anybody that before. So that's what I Hear the Alarm. That's where I said the word the alarm. And then in the end, it says, but better sense says. So now when I was in high school with the other bad relationship breakup that I had, the song that truly made me feel better was the song Better Sense by Hot Water Music. And it like made me feel like I can have faith in myself and do and heal and be better. And like, I don't know. Like, and so I said, but better sense says, hey, turn the record over. And it's like, so I was referencing these little bits. I have tons of little jokes to myself that maybe no one will ever get.
I mean, the references in this song are probably more at this point than any song I've covered on the show. Like you're pulling from so many different directions. I'm like,
yeah,
it's like a schizophrenic hour songwriting session, you know. But yeah. It's amazing though. Like you got so much going on in this song.
Well, I get excited about like multiple things. Like I've always been a person who I'll take any kind of music. Like I'll listen to like ska music and then listen to pop and I'll listen to anything. I don't like everything, but I will try everything. And I let everything influence me. Like for instance, like right now I get obsessed over things too. Like not in a bad way, in a good way, where like the thing that I'm obsessed with now is in the song Material Girl by Madonna, the way that the chorus melody goes is extremely weird, and it's not a common thing, and I'm obsessed with the, like, you know, like when it breaks down and there's like a material. Yeah. Like the way that it like goes with the rest of it, there's like parts in that song melodically that hit these minor notes that are incredible. And I'm like, that's going to make it into a song somehow. And I just pull from everywhere, but I feel like that's why the songs, I try to make them interesting because I pull from so many spots. And I'm not just going like, hey, what did Rancid do on Let's Go? Like, that was awesome. Let me copy that, which it is awesome. But Rancid was pulling from like 50 million places, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what made them good.
You're tripping me out right now, because if you'd have told me an hour ago that I'd be talking about Lane Meyer and Material Girl in the same conversation, I'd be like, what alternate universe am I in? This is great. I'll tell you, I love how the melody changes on verse two. You go up to a higher register and it's more intense delivery wise here.
Yeah.
A lot of times, bands are afraid to do that. It's like the first verse or second verse has to sound like the first verse. And it doesn't sound like you were afraid here. And did Brendan push you, or is that kind of where you wanted to go?
No, that's where I naturally do. Brendan actually was trying to make me split the difference. Like he was like, you got to make it sound a little bit like the first verse. He's like, you can't just abandon it, you know. And he said you can, but he's like, if you're going for, like, if you want to be on the radio, this is, you got to kind of follow some of the rules sometimes, not all the time.
Okay, which brings you to my next point. Was there talk about bringing that lyric back? I can't move on and I can't stay the same, and all my friends say, because here it's, I used to hear when she would sleep in my arms, but better sense says. Was that always that lyric there?
Yeah, because I would have been like, beat it, Brendan. Like, I don't, that's like too far for me. Like, I go, like, if okay. I feel something, like, I'm always like more... Like if I get excited about it and it won't be a good idea, like commercially, I will always go with my excitement. Like, so I've probably ruined opportunities.
Yeah, you know, I'll be the first one to admit there's times that I've been wrong with my songs. I'll look back and say that should have been this and that. But, you know, my gut is usually right. And you have to go. You have to go with how you feel, and you have to stick to your convictions sometimes.
Yeah.
Chorus two is the same lyrically as chorus one. Lyric, lay at her feet, the melody goes up there with intensity.
Yeah,
it really lifts there before the guitar solo.
Yeah, that is like, so from that line to the end of the song, the vocal delivery, I really wanted, just, I was such a big fan of The Who and Pearl Jam, like live, and both of those singers, like Roger Daltrey and Eddie Vedder, they didn't do it all the time, but they always had a righteous scream. Like a real, like, it was like James Brown, but like way cooler, like just like, rah, like, and I didn't know if I could do that, but I was like, I've got to try this. And this is my chance. And so on the rest of the song, I was like, I'm going to try and burn it like on a few of these vocals. And like, it turned out cool. And I thought it came out good. So I just let it go. And these are some of those, you're hearing me experiment on the, from yeah. here to the end.
Well, out of all the guys, and I love a lot of the bands, you know, not talking smack on any of them, but the bands that were doing the kind of gruff, screamy thing that you do, your delivery to me was always leaps and bounds above. And it was just, you could enunciate, and you could hear what you were singing, but it was still gruff and it still sounded tough.
Yeah. Well, that was a lot to Brendan's credit, is he would always tell me like, he'd be like, listen, man, I'm not trying to tell you like how to sing, but you got to enunciate. He's like, you can't. Cause when I talk, especially, I would just be like mumbling. And he's like, dude, I can't tell what you're saying. And I got the lyrics in front of me. You can't do that. He's like, you gotta, he goes, the words are good. I want to hear the words. You got to enunciate. And so he taught me that on this record.
And he's right. I think it's so important. And I think with this track especially, it really, really is apparent. The guitar solo is 22 seconds long. It starts at 2 minutes. It goes to 222. The chord progression changes for the solo. And a tambourine comes in here really loud. Panned off to the, off to the left speaker. And I'm like, okay, it's time to get on the dance floor now. Yeah. It's, you know, the tambo's in.
There's the tambourine in there. That's awesome.
Yeah, tambourine's in there. And I'm wondering what pedal is on the solo. Is that like a Big Muff electro harmonics? That's what it sounds like almost.
It would have been with Alex, man. He was like a scientist. So that was probably I remember him taking out a wah-wah pedal and then putting it. He like took out the guts and put it into a pedal and like had like the frequency, and so he'd set it. So it'd be like weird. And then like, dude, it was probably like a Univibe, like, but an old, like a legit one, like a Jimi Hendrix thing.
It's a great sound, but again, it's the guitar solo. It's not like hitting you between the eyes. It's still kind of subtle.
Yeah.
You know, it's letting the band breathe. And when you got the mixes back from Brennan, was there ever discussion of maybe the solo should be louder? Is that where you guys heard it sit in the mix?
I mean, I don't know if like there was ever too much like mix discussions. Like we were probably like, sounds good.
sometimes that's a good place to be in. Yeah. I've been there, and I've also been like, I need the guitar and the left speaker turned up a half dB, and you'll start to drive your other bandmates and the mixer nuts. They want to kill you, you know?
Right.
And I can get that way, and it's not fun. You know, I don't know if after the guitar solo, if you would call this, I think you referred to it as the bridge earlier. It's three bars of just that arpeggiated guitar from the intro come in. And so I guess we'll call it a very short bridge. On the fourth bar, the vocals come in. And when this thing first starts, that last note of the guitar solo is ringing out over that arpeggio. It's a cool little flavor there.
Yeah.
And you get in the lyric again, and all my friends say, before chorus three hits.
Yeah.
And all my friends say. Chorus three comes on, and just the intensity of this chorus vocally, it's ramped up. Same lyrics, back half again, the harmonies are there, it's killer. And all my friends say. And then we go into an outro, and the lyric on the outro is where you used to be, where you used to be, where you used to be here with me. what are you saying there to wrap up the song?
Well, I think that's like that's when the focus shifts from the listener and the self to the person that the song's about. And because the I guess the last line, "Let somebody else lay at her feet," is also the first line of that end part, because it's "Let somebody else lay at her feet, where you used to be, you know, here with me." And like, you're just shifting the focus to just be like sort of this I don't know, like the taillights farewell, you know, kind of like end of the movie thing. That's a yet another example of shifting, you know, perspective and focus and narrative are all pliable in my mind. Like whoever's speaking in a song could shift from line to line. I'd feel no need to follow the rules of language in song.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be first person or third person. It could shift and go all over. I like that.
Totally. Yeah. It's just fair game for me. Like I think the point is paramount.
Here at the outro is a great new guitar lick that's panned right that comes in. First time you hear it.
Yeah.
On the second line, "Where You Used to Be," it sounds like B3 organ pads in here.
That's Brendan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's totally awesome.
It's so cool because it just gives you just some extra heaviness right at the tail end of this song I don't know if it's so much needed, but it just feels so good.
He's master of that. Like, he just knows when the thing is like he just knows where the things need to come in. And he played organ for Bob Dylan, like and he's like just that guy. He's like a musical genius when it comes to like arrangement.
It's a total chills moment when the B3 came in there. I was like, this is just, it can't get much better.
Yeah.
At the end of the song here, four bars, it ends on what I call the unresolved C minor, you know,
that
chord, which is the starting chord of the chorus. However, it feels like a suspense chord here because the outro is rooted in E flat.
Yeah, we did that on purpose though, to make people like, we thought about it. We were like, ending on the one chord should be the real deal, especially for a song that's like a single. But we were like, again, that's the us in it. It's like that.
Yeah.
Nah, like, let's do the C minor just cause we're not like, you know, we're not like the bands who are like so art rock that they feel like they're like nasty and noisy to almost appear smarter than their audience. Like, I hate that.
Yeah.
I can't get down with it at all.
Yeah.
But like just a little subtleties that sort of make it uncomfortable, because I don't know, like, it was a really poppy song, and like, I feel like ending it like that sort of says there's not more of this coming next. And the next song was like handwritten on the record, which is pretty, it's like, it's a dark song.
And we waited for sirens that never come, and we only ride by the moon.
I don't know, the mood of that record is like a little dark.
Yeah, I love that it ends on the C minor, but the riff at the end of the outro starts in E flat, and it's just cool. It ends on like you said, on the one, but it doesn't feel like it.
Right.
It's great. So, listen, man, this was a lot of fun to go through. But before we go, what would you like to leave the listeners with? What's going on with you solo? What's going on with Gaslight? If there is anything going on, what's happening?
Well, I mean, nothing much is happening right now. I'm trying to wait to get on this like a never ending cancellation tour. But I guess I have like some dates. Like,
I'm on the same one. We're on the same tour. Cool.
It's awesome. It's just like, no, it's horrible. But it is what it is. I think it'll pass. I think it will get back to like, you know, especially summertime. I think it'd be cool with people outside. I don't have like, my year is sort of like being born as it is right now. Like, so I'm like finding out what's going on next, and there's not much really going on to speak of. Gaslight was quiet. Like, it's been quiet for a while, but like, you know, like, again, like, I couldn't tell anybody that, like, some people are like, all right, you guys broke up. We didn't break up. We just like, didn't have any good ideas. So we were like, I don't know, when we have a good idea, we'll come back. So like, who knows?
Total respect with what you just said though. I always like bands. We're broke up. It's like, well, we're a great band. You're probably not going to ever really break up, are you?
That's the thing, is like, we never wanted to, you know, because we did like a couple shows in 2018 and we didn't want to be like, we're broken up. Oh, wait, just kidding. Like, so we just said like, yo, we don't have any good ideas right now. Like, if we have good ones, we'll come back. I don't know. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
So it's not like, it's not as dire as people want to make it. Like magazines, like former like members of anybody.
Yeah. They hate each other. Yeah. No, we don't.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's awesome. Well, listen, man, again, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
There's lots more Chris to Makes a Podcast after a few words from our sponsors.
Hello, Tom May here, host of Future Friday. I've spent the last 15 years on the road with my band, The Menzingers, where I've met all kinds of wild and fascinating people. So I started a podcast. On Future Friday, I talk to fellow musicians about the moments that made them, their passions outside of music, and the curiosities that tie us all together. I've also talked to the likes of UFO researchers, magicians, soldiers, and documentary filmmakers, and I'm constantly searching for folks that can shape and change our view of the world. You can check out Future Friday wherever you like.
Hey, if you need a unique, thoughtful, and inexpensive gift for a friend or loved one, check out iloveenamelpins.com. Make someone's day by giving them a little present to show you care. Over 80 different pins are available, everything from cats and dogs to your favorite celebrities. And to top it off, you can use the discount code ChrisDemakes at checkout to save 30% on your order. iloveenamelpins.com. Give them something to wear that shows that you care.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Chris to Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is email your song via MP3 only and bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is Keep Flying, a five-piece ska punk band from Long Island, New York, featuring Harry Menzel on vocals and guitar, Chuck Bernard on bass and vocals, Peter Vriones on drums, John Ryan on the sax, and Ricky Coates on trombone. Here's a snippet of their song, Fire Sale.
There's no aftershock, 'cause it feels like a constant earthquake. Make it stop, 'cause I just need to stand up straight.
I cannot
live with my whole world crumbling around me. Just let me get my wits about me.
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
Well, not to sound like a broken record, no pun intended when it comes to this song, but I think that may have been one of my favorite episodes. He was awesome. What a great conversation.
Yeah. You know, and it's so crazy. At the top, I had said, you know, can't believe we've never met. You know, I don't recall Less Than Jake being on many festivals with Gaslight. And man, he was so fun to talk to. What a great guy.
Yeah, that was great. He's been asked for a lot by people in our Facebook group and people that reach out to us about who they want to see as guests. He's been asked for a whole lot, and I can see why after that episode. I mean, I've always known that they were a really great band, but yeah, on top of that, a great podcast guest.
He was killing me. I mean, he brings up Skid Row, which of course I know the weird oddity that they had a singer named Matt Fallon before Sebastian Bach, before they ever got signed. Nobody knows that. He knew that, being from Jersey, which I thought was funny. He talked about Lane Meyer, a relatively unknown punk band that I ended up hanging out with a guy in Florida that was in that band. Less Than Jake played with them. And then out of nowhere, he starts talking about how he's currently obsessing about a song that's going on 40 years old, Material Girl. Like, whoa, that's crazy.
Hey, I think the thing about Gaslight Anthem, and you got into this a little bit, the word that I would use to describe their music would be earnest. And no, I'm not talking about Ernest Goes to Camp or Ernest, Ernest Scared Stupid, which would be funny if I was referring to that Ernest. Like, you know, it reminds me, Vern, of Gaslight Anthem.
That's not what I mean. I'm pretty sure nobody thought that, Chris.
They weren't thinking about Ernest Scared Stupid when they listened to Gaslight Anthem. No, it's that they have believable, relatable lyrics. And I don't know if I've ever heard it talked about as well as Brian just talked about why it is that New Jersey bands always seem to fit in that mold. That was a pretty cool explanation, that they're in this place that's surrounded by all these, I don't know, big cities, places where there are lots of people, and it kind of feels like they're the working class version of those places or something. Or how did he put it? I don't know exactly how he put it, but it was cool.
Yeah, that's pretty much how he put it. You're eclipsed and overshadowed by a definitely New York City. I mean, right. You know, you talk about having a huge shadow cast over you. That, you know, Philadelphia is close by. He mentioned DC. You know, that was an explanation that I have never heard before. I thought that was really, really interesting.
Something else he said that I thought was really cool, and I've talked about this before with my friends, is that he was talking about how, I think this was in reference to you saying, like, your album went to number 3 on the Billboard charts the week it came out. And he's like, he's basically laughing about it. Like, yeah, it's pretty crazy. Like, he thinks it's just as crazy as anyone. But the fact that when I was growing up and I was a teenager, I thought it would be the most amazing thing in the world to be the biggest punk band. And I even wrote down his exact quote. He said, if we could be the biggest punk band, that'd be sick. But then I don't know when it was. I mean, granted, there was Green Day and The Offspring and stuff when I was a teenager. But for the most part, most of the bands that I listened to, if they were big, maybe they sold 80,000, 100,000 albums, which is still a big number, don't get me wrong, but that was what big was. Then all of a sudden, by the mid-2000s, being a big band meant you were selling millions of albums. I had friends' bands who were selling millions of albums, and it's just weird how that happened. You know, when he said that, I'm like, yeah, I get what you're talking about, man. It's crazy that he probably never imagined, like, they'd be on number 3 on the Billboard charts, you know?
Yeah, and I was careful with my language with him. I didn't want it to, like they're an overnight sensation. But in the grand scheme of things, it happened pretty quick for these guys. I mean, they were formed in 06, and by 08, the 59 Sound was out, and they were just rising quick. And, you know, by the time they got signed to Mercury in 2012 and Handwritten was released, it was like all the stars were lined up for these guys. It was the perfect storm.
Yeah, that's a pretty quick trajectory and, you know, hiatus, you know, that their period, like, that's probably around like the Beatles period. You know, the Beatles was like, what, 8 years or 9 years that they were together and all this stuff happened. It seems like a lot of stuff happened for Gaslight Anthem in that time. And, you know, no offense to Gaslight Anthem, not really comparing them to the Beatles, but you know what I'm saying is, like, they happened fast.
Yeah. Something else I thought was really humbling and awesome. He said, he's like, you know, people like to make a big deal out of, oh, they broke up. He's like, we never broke up. We just, you know, when we have ideas again, maybe we'll play. And I thought that was refreshing. A lot, you know, bands love to capitalize on that reunion tour and all that. And I've always hate those quick cash grabs. I feel that the ones that pay the price are the fans, both emotionally, because they love your band and they miss you, and then they pay out of pocket when you come back for these reunion tours. It's ridiculous. You know, he said, no, we're not broke up. We're just not doing nothing right now. I thought that was really honest and sincere.
Dude, what was cool about it is that he said, we just don't have any ideas right now, because they could easily forced ideas and maybe the songwriting would have suffered. So what that tells me is when Gaslight Anthem finally does make a new album, it's going to be really good, because there's going to be a reason for it. It's going to be because the ideas are there, the songs are there. I think that's the refreshing part of it, is that they weren't trying to force out average, mediocre music. If they didn't have the songs, they were like, we don't have them right now. And yeah, when they do, I'm sure they're going to be great. And I thought it was cool too, Chris, we've talked about this on past episodes, but in reference to Brendan O'Brien, when it comes to songwriting, he had referenced that it has to have a purpose or it's out of here. As far as, like, there's no meandering parts in the songs. It's like everything that's there is there for a reason. And I think that's an awesome way to approach writing a song.
Yeah, I love that.
And enunciation. He stressed enunciation. And I think maybe that's something that gets lost sometimes. I mean, especially in punk rock music. Think about some of the voices and some of the deliveries of people in punk rock. But it is important. You and I might not think about this as much, Chris, because we might tend to err on the side of melody or whatever. But people like to know what the lyrics are. They want to know what's being said.
Yeah, I mean, I love the forefathers of this scene. You know, the Leatherface and Refused and some of those bands. But man, you know, they're not enunciating like Brian is. And I haven't said to him, I think he's one of the best at it. I think he's gruff and emotional, and he can scream, but you're still able to understand what he's saying. And he credited a lot of that to Brendan O'Brien, which I thought was cool.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, Chris, can I enunciate something real quick?
Please.
Will everybody out there please go leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or Spotify if you got a chance. If you got
the chance. What a segue.
Yeah, you know, go leave us a rating. You know, we have a Facebook group. It's a nice place to talk with people about music. We have fun in there. I don't know. If you're on Facebook, if you're not, then I don't know what to tell you. Also, we have a supporting cast program. If you like this podcast and you want to support this podcast for a few bucks a month, you get a whole bunch of bonus episodes and you have a chance to be a guest on Defeat the Makes. There's other stuff associated, but more than anything, you're helping us keep this podcast going, and that's awesome. That's just some of the things I wanted to enunciate there, Chris. I hope I spoke clearly while I was speaking there.
You did a fantastic job, Chris, and I'll enunciate a few things here as well. Please join our Facebook group. Krista Makes a Podcast has a Facebook group. It's a lot of fun. We'd love to see you there. Give me a follow on Instagram as well. I'm at Less Than Chris D. And if you'd like a custom song for you, that special someone, a jingle for your business or podcast, hit me up, KristaMakes@gmail.com. I'd love to write one for you. Special thanks to this week's guest, Brian Fallon, for being with us, and we'll see you next week.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaking microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life. And then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind Podcast.
Hey, everyone. This is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week, I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.